And, of course, the trombones tell us it's birthday time here on Iris. On this April 2nd, we have two birthdays we're celebrating, Francis Waring of Waterloo, and an out-of-state birthday, Matthew Millar of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So, Francis and Matthew, very happy birthdays to both of you on this April 2nd. You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service. If you're hearing us on your television on Iowa PBS and you're not a registered IRIS user, please give us a call at 515-243-6833 so we can get you on our list. We need to know who is listening in order to keep our services free. Now, here's Deanna with today's obituaries.
Thank you, Pat. Donald Guy Blair, let's see, Donald Francis Guy Blair Jr. was born December 1st, 1946, to Donald F. and Marjorie A. Height Blair in Fort Dodge, Iowa. And this is Dateline Pella. He loved growing up on the family farm and being an older brother to his three younger siblings, Neil, Kelly, and Jane. Guy met Jane Sandell his sophomore year of high school on the Ferris wheel of the Dayton Rodeo. On June 16, 1969, they were united in marriage in Burnside, Iowa. And to this union, they were blessed with two daughters, Brenna and Lindsay. Guy was a proud graduate of the close-knit Dayton High School class of 1965. He earned his bachelor's degree in music at Central College with the class of 1969, where he became lifelong friends with his Theta fraternity brothers, as well as many music colleagues. After college, he was the director of bands for North Polk for 4 years before becoming director of bands at Pella Community High School. For the next 32 years, he served as director of bands at Pella Community High School, where he found great joy and success in partnering with his band colleagues to help students reach their full potential and accomplish feats greater than themselves. Under his leadership, Pella Community Schools won the Exemplary Music Program Award for the state of Iowa. Guy's marching bands represented Pella in the Cherry Blossom Parade in Washington, D.C., the Citrus Bowl Parade in Orlando, Florida, the Tournament of Roses Parade in Pasadena, California, and several other national stages. Guy's impact in the music education arena transcends well beyond the community of Pella. At the state level, he frequently served as a guest clinician and judge, and was active in several organizations. While president of the Iowa Bandmasters Association, he organized the Iowa Alliance for Arts Education, the IAAE, which continues to serve Iowa arts programs. Guy also served as the president of the Iowa Music Educators Association as the organization's first executive director. He helped write the model curriculum for instrumental music for the Iowa Department of Education. Guy received the Carl King Award for Active Directors in 1991 and for Retired Directors in 2008 from the Iowa Bandmasters Association. He also received the Distinguished Service Award from the Iowa Music Educators Association. On the national level, Guy was a consultant for the National Board of Professional Teaching Standards on benchmark portfolios for teachers working toward National Board certification. In 2010, Guy was selected as the recipient of the National Music Educator of the Year by the National Federation of State High School Associations. Even in retirement, Guy stayed very active in the world of music education. He loved continuing the relationships he had built through serving as a travel consultant for Bob Rogers Travel and as a mentor for beginning band directors in Iowa. The value of music education was incredibly important to him, surpassed only by his faith and family. In reminiscing about marriage, he wrote, "Jane is the wisest person I've known. I trust her opinion about everything from raising our children to decisions on finances to how we live our lives. I really married up. I've learned to be more thoughtful, to be kinder to others, to be more spiritual, to be more industrious, and to be more caring." He was a proud dad to his daughters and rarely missed a concert or a game in which they were involved. He was always there with a listening ear and great advice. His impact in their lives is undeniable, and they never questioned his love for them. Guy had a special bond with his grandkids. He loved spending time with and FaceTiming with the Hyatt girls. Playing checkers, airplanes, and piano were among his favorite activities with the Brandt foursome. and Family Lake Week was the highlight of every summer. Guy cherished hosting extended family gatherings where he was an adored uncle. Guy was a longtime dedicated member of Peace Lutheran Church in Pella, where he played the keyboard and was involved with many small groups through the years. Guy passed away March 29, 2024, after a brief battle with an aggressive cancer, but his legacy of love and the power of music will live on for generations to come. Those left to cherish his memory are his wife Jane and their daughters, Brenna and Rob Hyatt, their children, Chloe and Calla, and Lindsay and Josiah Brandt, and their children, Matthias, Becca, Ethan, and Elsie. He's also survived by his siblings and siblings-in-law, Neil Blair of Kansas City, Missouri, Kelly and Becky Blair of Harcourt, Iowa, Jane and Brad Boswell of Pella, Jean and Janet Sandell of Cedar Falls, Don and Joan Sandell of Burnside, Iowa, his aunt, Marvel Girk of Mankato, Minnesota, and 12 nephews and nieces. Guy was preceded in death by his parents, Donald and Marjorie Blair, and his parents-in-law, Wesley and Wilma Sandell. Visitation will begin at 2 p.m. Friday, April 5th, at the First Church in Pella, with family present from 4 to 6 p.m. The memorial service will be held at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, April 6th, also at the First Church. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be given to Peace Prayer Garden or the Iowa Bandmasters Association Endowment Fund. The Garden Chapel Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Out of Mason City, David H. Warner. David Howard Warner, age 82, passed away on Friday, March 29th at Good Shepherd Health Center in Mason City. He had lived in Good Shepherd's memory care unit for the past five months. David was born in Mason City on February 20th, 1942, to his parents, Dorothy Mae Boyer Warner and Howard James Warner. Dave attended Mason City Public Schools, graduating in 1960 from Mason City High School. He then spent two more years at Mason City Junior College. Throughout those school years, Dave developed a lifelong love of sports. He was on football, basketball, and baseball teams throughout high school, then continued with baseball and basketball. One of the proudest accomplishments was playing on the Mason City Junior College basketball team that won the state tournament in 1963. Dave continued his education with the help of sports scholarships at Bemidji State University in Minnesota. After college, he was immediately drafted into the Army and served in the reserves for 7 years. In 1967, Dave married Dorothy Rogers of Little Cedar, Iowa. They lived in Des Moines, where Dave spent almost his entire working career with Principal. He continued to be a part of sports teams through Principal's intramural program. He also began running, doing a number of Des Moines dam-to-dam runs. He finally settled on golf. He loved early morning golf when he had the course to himself. Dorothy and Dave had one daughter, Laura, who carried on her dad's basketball tradition at Dowling Catholic High School in West Des Moines and Creighton University in Omaha. He never missed watching his daughter's sporting events. After Dorothy's death in 2003, Dave married Susan Graves in 2006. They lived in Des Moines and moved back to Mason City in 2019. Dave enjoyed working outside in the yard and helping Sue with her beautiful gardens. He is survived by his wife, Susan, his daughter, Laura, married to Darren Waldrop, stepsons, Paul Bosfeld and Mark Bosfeld. He also enjoyed spending time with his nieces and nephews and step-grandchildren. A funeral service will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, April 4th, at Isles Westover Chapel in Des Moines, with visitation beginning at 1 p.m. Burial will be at Glendale Cemetery with refreshments and fellowship back at Isles Westover Chapel. A memorial service will also be held in Mason City on a date and time to be determined at the Wilson Chapel at the First Congregational Church. The family requests, in lieu of flowers, donations in Dave's honor to be directed to the University of Iowa, Stead Family Children's Hospital. Online condolences are welcome at islescares.com.
Okay, thank you, Dan, and I'll carry on with a couple more obituaries here. Luella J. Van Way, age 89, passed away peacefully at her home in Johnston on March 29th, 2024. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. Friday, April 5th at Isles Westover Chapel. A service will follow beginning at 11 a.m. Interment will be at 3 p.m. Friday on the East Friesland Cemetery, and that's in rural Ackley, Iowa. Luella was born on July 15, 1934 in Ackley, Iowa, to parents Walter and Carrie Harms. She met Leslie Van Way on a blind date, June 8, 1953, and on June 8, 1954, they married. They made their home in Waterloo, where they raised two daughters, Lori and Leisha. They hosted foreign exchange students from France and Blackhawk hockey players. Luella was a dental assistant, a skilled seamstress, loved to travel, camping, and playing cards with her friends and family. She was a member of the Westminster Presbyterian Church and a Girl Scout leader in Waterloo. She worked at Sears in Waterloo in the men's department for several years before retiring in 1996. In 2007, she moved to Johnston, Iowa to be closer to her two granddaughters. She was very active. She enjoyed meeting new people, going to casinos, and was involved with several women's card groups in the Johnston area. Luella is survived by her daughters, Lori Van Way and Leisha Lane, grandchildren, Jesse Kiesling Wagner, Lindsay Reagan, and Natalie Lane, great-grandsons Lane and Raiden. She was preceded in death by her parents, Carrie and Walter, her husband, Leslie, and her son-in-law, Paul Lane. Memorial contributions may be directed to Ellipsis in Johnston, Iowa. Online condolences are welcomed at theislescare.com. Robert James Cornish, age 93, passed away Sunday, March 24, 2024, at the Lakeside Village in Panora. Memorial services will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, April 6th, at the Panora United Methodist Church. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services at the church. Burial of his urn will be in the Brethren Cemetery in Panora, followed by the service. Memorials may be directed to the Yale Saddle Club, Panora EMS, and Care Initiatives Hospice. Twiggs Funeral Home in Panora is entrusted with this service. And our final obituary for today is Mary Ellen Hedberg. She is age 56, passed away peacefully on Friday, March 29th, 2024, while under Unity Point Hospice Care at Trinity Center at Luther Park, where she had spent the last 3 years of her life and was affectionately known as the Little Lady. Mary Ellen was born September 18, 1967, in Des Moines to Arthur and Janet Hedberg, Jr. Mary Ellen's parents were strong advocates for those with special needs. Mary Ellen attended Ruby Van Meter and Hoover High School in Des Moines. She lived at home until the age of 18 when she moved to Behavior Technologies Group Home. Mary Ellen worked in the sheltered workshop for many years at Behavior Technology. She loved music of all kinds, especially 70s music, and listening to her niece sing. She also had a love of Diet Coke and ice cream. She is survived by her siblings, Eric, married to Carolyn Hedberg, Mark, married to Amy Hedberg, and Catherine Ramakers, married to Randy, sister-in-law Nancy Hedberg, as well as many nieces, nephews, great-nieces and nephews, cousins, and extended family. Mary Ellen was preceded in death by her parents, Arthur and Janet Hedberg, and her brother, Chris Hedberg. A sincere thank you to Mary Ellen's care providers at Trinity Center at Luther Park, at Birch Boulevard, for their compassionate care of Mary Ellen during her residency there. A private family graveside service and celebration of life will be held at a later date. In lieu of flowers, contributions would be appreciated to the Ark of Iowa or Gigi's Playhouse in loving memory of Mary Ellen, and condolences may be expressed at the Hamilton Funeral Home website. That's our obituaries for today. Deanna?
Thank you, Pat. Okay, I can't resist this one. We're not quite ready for the 50 states, but I have to read this. Highlight, Great Falls, Montana. It's a picture of a big box and a fellow letting out these wonderful geese into the pond. It says it was a lively chorus of quacks and honks surrounded by squeals and laughter from a human audience as Great Falls Parks and Recreation personnel released a gaggle onto Gibson Pond Friday. For the past 5 months, The odd mix of hip-high, loud-mouthed ganders and scuttling ducks have stayed cozy and well-fed in a small building at the north end of Gibson Park, affectionately known as Honker Hilton. Friday was a spring release, an annual event that now draws a large crowd of onlookers to chuckle at the waterfowl's exuberant return to the pond. Lovely. No, don't. You can't take it back yet, Pat. I'll read one more article. From page 6 of the main section. Terror group that attacked Moscow nightclub eyes the U.S. Getting more serious here now. This is from Tom Vandenbroek of USA Today, Dateline, Washington. The ISIS-K terrorist organization that killed more than 140 Russians on March 22nd in Moscow would like to replicate the attack in the U.S., but lacks the capability, according to current and former senior U.S. officials. The U.S. remains target number one for ISIS-K, said Mark Quantock, a retired two-star Army general who oversaw intelligence operations for U.S. Central Command. He said they clearly would like to strike the homeland, but their challenge is penetrating our security, which has proven to be quite resilient in recent years. Known for its brutality, ISIS-K considers Russia and many Western countries to be anti-Muslim. Russia has sided with Syrian President Bashar Assad in its civil war, launching airstrikes for years that have killed Islamic militants and displaced hundreds of thousands of Syrians. They also regard even hardline Muslim regimes like the Taliban to be insufficiently devout. They once targeted a maternity clinic in Afghanistan and were responsible for the August 2021 attack in Kabul that killed 13 U.S. troops and 170 Afghans. The K in ISIS-K stands for Khorasan, a region in and around Afghanistan. ISIS-K is an even more violent offshoot of ISIS, which gained strength in 2014 and seized swaths of territory in Iraq and Syria. Sustained military operations by U.S.-backed forces have since sapped its strength, yet it still strives to strike inside America. The recent concert hall attack in Russia and the ISIS-K suicide bombers in Iran in January, who killed about 100 worshippers, show this group's ability to export attacks, one official said. But they also show the limits of ISIS-K's reach with no recent assaults in Western Europe. One of ISIS's last major attacks in Western Europe took place almost 8 years ago, killing 17 people. That type of attack appears beyond ISIS-K's current capability, the official said. The group does, however, seek to inspire disaffected people in the West to mount their own terror attacks. In congressional testimony, senior military officials have said that pressure on ISIS-K by the ruling Taliban in Afghanistan has, quote, temporarily disrupted the group's ability to strike in the U.S. and the other Western nations. Army General Eric Kurilla, commander of U.S. Central Command, said the Taliban targeted key ISIS-K leaders in 2023, but was unable to sustain pressure on the group, allowing it to regenerate. He thinks ISIS-K could attack U.S. and Western interests abroad in as few as 6 months with little to no warning. Before the ISIS-K attacks in Iran and Russia, U.S. officials sent warnings to those governments. John Kirby, a White House National Security Council spokesman, told reporters Thursday that the Kremlin was informed in writing March 7th about the potential attack on a public gathering like a concert. When the U.S. intelligence community receives specific, credible information about a threat abroad, the information gets passed on to U.S. citizens through local embassies, he said. The information is also passed on to the foreign government, in this case, Russia, so they could take action to disrupt it. Pat.
Thank you, Dan. And we'll now go to the 50 states. First up, of course, is Alabama and Montgomery. For nearly two decades, the Black Belt Community Foundation has divvied up hundreds of thousands of dollars to go toward community centers, after-school programs, arts nonprofits, and other creative projects. The funding has previously been available in two separate grant cycles, but this year, for the first time, the foundation is combining the grants into one, the BBCF Arts and Community Grant. The amount of funding available per grant varies from $500 to $7,500. In Juneau, in Alaska, the viral disease that was first diagnosed in Fairbanks in 2015 and known as Alaska Pox is being renamed as Boreal Pox, the Alaska Beacon reported. In Phoenix, Metro Phoenix has emerged as a global leader in one high-tech sector, data centers. More corporations are locating facilities that house computers, servers, and other equipment around the valley, especially in outlying areas such as Mesa, Chandler, and Goodyear, according to a news report. Virginia ranks first globally, followed by Atlanta, Tokyo, Dallas, and London, with Metro Phoenix in sixth place. Hot Springs, Arkansas, a fourth suspect has been arrested in connection with the disappearance of a man last year, according to the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. In Palm Springs, California, Desert Hot Springs is dipping into its reserves to cover an estimated $1.5 million budget deficit. The shortfall is largely due to unforeseen expenses and to a projected decline in revenue after a reduction in the city's cannabis tax rate. In Fort Collins, Colorado, it's once again time for the city to flush its water distribution system in downtown areas of Fort Collins. And that means residents' water could temporarily look different or water pressure might be reduced. The city began flushing on Monday, and the work will continue on weekdays for 4 weeks, weather permitting, according to a news release from the city. In Norwich, in Connecticut, the newest STEM class at Griswold High School is about to take flight. This fall, Griswold High School will have a drone technology class. Students will learn how to fly indoor racing drones made by rocket drones designed for educational use. In Wilmington, Delaware, a bill headed to Delaware Governor John Carney's desk would expand access to medical marijuana, empowering healthcare providers to decide who could benefit from the therapy and eliminating the need for those over age 65 to see a doctor for medical marijuana certification. From the nation's capital, police are investigating after a girl was taken to the hospital after being shot in the leg. In Orlando, Florida, 2 months ahead of the June 1st start date of hurricane season, a leading forecast is predicting a potentially explosive season as abnormally warm surface or sea surface temperatures in La Nina gain dominion over the Atlantic Basin. In Augusta, Georgia, a Columbia County developer who proposed building a 125-foot clock tower off Bobby Jones Expressway more than 4 years ago is back with a revised version of the original plan. In Honolulu, the installation of a fence that would protect an endangered bird that was once thought to have disappeared from Mauna Kea has been completed. In Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, city officials said 57 residents were notified that their personal information was accessed in a ransomware attack last month. In Springfield, Illinois, a painting in the Springfield Art Association's permanent collection by a local artist who gained international acclaim is headed to the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C. South Bend, Indiana, a total of 75 mice died in a research lab at the University of Notre Dame after research staff mistakenly doubled the dose of an experimental drug last fall. The university recently self-reported to federal regulators. Staff did not follow the protocols approved by an in-house committee to oversee animal care, the report states. Deanna?
All right, out of Des Moines, Iowa. In the wake of last year's sports betting scandal at the University of Iowa and Iowa State, state regulators tried to tighten rules to prevent athletes from gambling on their own games, but those changes are now in limbo after lawmakers said part of the proposal would be too difficult for sports books to enforce. Out of Topeka, Kansas. Kansas lawmakers are looking to expand the power of Attorney General Chris Kobach at a time when his office is understaffed. From more criminal prosecutorial authority and additional civil enforcement powers to the power to suspend regulations for select businesses, the office would need several additional workers. From Louisville, Kentucky, a new shipyard proposed just off the banks of Six Mile Island State Nature Preserve has stirred opposition among conservation and waterway advocates who say the industrial development could jeopardize protected land and habitat. Out of Shreveport, Louisiana, Louisiana State University Health Shreveport has signed a cooperative research and development agreement with Barksdale Air Force Base to study the physiological and cognitive stress that B-52 air crews experience on long-duration deployments. Out of York, Maine, the owners of one of York's landmark hotels are seeking approval for doubling its size. Geary Hotel Management is seeking to add 48 new rooms to the Union Bluff Hotel, bringing the total to 88. From Hagerstown, Maryland, Hagerstown is getting a new ballpark downtown. The state is paying the bills, and now the future stadium's owners and operators are asking the state's legislators to provide the legal protections of a local government. A bill has been proposed to give the Hagerstown Multi-Use Sports and Events Facility Incorporated, a nonprofit entity, the classification of a local government under state law, thereby limiting liability to $400,000 per individual claim. Out of Farmingham, Massachusetts, demand for food is up more than 85% from 18 months ago, according to one local pantry, as the region continues to grapple with higher than normal inflation, an increasing number of homeless residents, and the high costs of housing. In Detroit, Michigan, the leader of the Catholic Church in Metro Detroit is sounding the alarm about what he calls gender confusion, critiquing the growing acceptance of transgender identity as a dangerous trend that will harm people. From Minneapolis, Minnesota, Minnesota's North Central University's George Floyd Memorial Scholarship for Young Black Students is being sued and accused of violating an anti-discrimination law. Out of Jackson, Mississippi, the Mississippi University for Women is offering up to $5,500 in scholarship funds to qualify Birmingham's Southern College students who want to transfer, the university's president announced.
Thanks, Deanna. Continuing with our 50 states, Missouri and Ozark Christian County is being sued for employment discrimination retaliation after an emergency management employee filed complaints against the supervisor. In Omaha, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack has announced that 18 agricultural producers and businesses in Nebraska will be receiving grants. From Reno, the city council in there doubled the amount of money allotted for outside legal counsel to fight Councilmember Jenny Brueckhaus's lawsuit against the city. In Concord, New Hampshire, a former school bus driver was sentenced to 9 years in prison for cyber-stalking an 8-year-old boy who was attending Greenland Central School. In Trenton, New Jersey, at long last, New Jersey Transit Board has recommended an individual to be the agency's customer advocate, a legally required role that has been vacant for more than 3 years. In Las Cruces, New Mexico, the University of New Mexico State University located there hopes to have its next president in place by January 2025. The Board of Regents selected a search committee to launch a second search for a new permanent leader after former Chancellor Dan Alvazu stepped down in April 2023. In Albany, New York, demand for mental health care in New York spiked 23% from 2013 to 2022, while the health system's capacity for treating those patients dropped by about 10%, a new state report shows. The systemic failures culminated during the COVID-19 pandemic as New Yorkers struggled with mental health exploded and treatment gaps were widest in upstate communities. In Raleigh, North Carolina, according to a study by HouseFresh, a national publication focused on indoor air quality, North Carolina saw the second biggest increase in wildfire acreage in 2023. Last year, Arizona had the most significant increase of wildlife acreage, followed by North Carolina. The Tar Heel State had 11,181 acres burned in 2022, but in 2023, that number jumped to 70,339 acres, or a 529% over the previous year, the study found. In Bismarck, a man was killed after a train crashed into his vehicle, which was stopped on the tracks. In Columbus, Ohio, data from the Columbus Division of Police showed that the city is experiencing some of the lowest level of violence in a decade. And finally, from Oklahoma City, a proposed charter school twice rejected for sponsorship by Putnam City Public Schools will have to wait 2 more months before learning if the Oklahoma State Board of Education will serve as its sponsor. Well, for the last 90 minutes, your readers have been Deanna Snyder and Pat Steele. It's been our pleasure to read for you. Now we'll take a short break to allow our next readers, Dale and Doug, to get into place.
Welcome back. Your new readers are Dale Finnegan and Doug Kretzinger. We'll continue with articles from the Des Moines Register and USA Today. And now here's Doug with our next article.
Thank you, Dale. Opinion section, USA Today. Trump's own SEC filing warns against buying his new stock. This is written by Chris Brennan. And that's it, Chris Brennan of USA Today. You may have heard, because the news was everywhere last week, that Donald Trump is suddenly a few billion dollars richer on paper after his social media site, Truth Social, went public on Tuesday. And you may be tempted to get in on the action for the new stock that inspired plenty of initial, even irrational, exuberance in the market. But take caution here, for the former one-term president has a very long history of business and personal calamities, along with a future that portends even more misfortune. Don't take my word for it. That warning comes straight from two filings Truth Social submitted about Trump last month to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, the agency in charge of protecting investors, maintaining orderly markets, and facilitating capital formation. Among the looming threats cited for the Republican nominee for president, he owes more than $500 million in civil verdicts, has 4 pending criminal cases, has an extensive track record for businesses filing for bankruptcy protections, and saw several entrepreneurial efforts totally flop. Oh, and one SEC filing notes that Truth Social has such a limited reach with users that even Trump might migrate to another social media site like X, the hellscape formerly known as Twitter, to get a bigger audience. 54% of registered voters would not use Truth Social. Truth Social's value might diminish if the popularity of President Donald Trump were to suffer, said the filing to the SEC. A Pew Research Center poll released March 19 found 60% of Americans hold an unfavorable view of Trump. Maybe don't bet your 401k on this one. Trump, who owns 60% of the company that now controls Truth Social, is obligated in his license agreement to make any non-political post there and then wait 6 hours before posting anywhere else, according to a February 14 SEC filing that said the site, quote, has limited time to benefit from his post and followers may not find it compelling to use Truth Social to read his post that quickly, end quote. The company also said Trump has sole discretion to use any social media website for politically related posts, and the company may lack any meaningful remedy if President Trump minimizes his use of Truth Social. I mean, you could say a thrice-married former real estate developer known for stiffing contractors for pay and dumping political allies in a fury has a reputation for just walking away. Truth Social notes that it will need millions of users to register and regularly use the site to be successful. The company cited a 2021 Hill-Harris X poll that found 54% of registered voters would not use Truth Social, while 30% said they would and 16% said maybe. No surprise here. Those results varied by political affiliation. 78% of Democrats and 58% of independents wanted no part of Truth Social, while 54% of Republicans wanted to log on. Twitter, now X, had 215 million active monthly users when it went public in 2013. Axios noted Wednesday, while Truth Social had just 5 million active monthly users when it went public Tuesday. X this month said it has 550 million active monthly users. X did not disclose how many of them are scam bots trying to sell you bogus cryptocurrency. The business model for now is upside down, with Truth Social putting up $3.3 million in sales in the first 9 months of 2023 and losses of almost $50 million. The stock, DJT, has been a roller coaster ride, opening Tuesday at $70.90 per share and surging to $79.38 before dropping to $61.96 when the NASDAQ closed on Thursday. The market was closed for Good Friday. On Monday, DJT closed at $48.66. Truth Social also spelled out for the Securities and Exchange Commission the long and weird history of Trump ventures gone wrong while asserting there can be no assurances that this company won't go the same route. Remember, Trump's Shuttle Incorporated? That airline, the filing said, was launched by Trump in 1989, defaulted on loans a year later, and ceased to exist by 1992. Trump University opened in 2005 but was dead in 6 years. With lawsuits that lingered into Trump's first run for president in 2016 and wrapped up in 2018 with a $25 million settlement from the guy then living in the White House. Trump Vodka, produced by a company that licensed his name, lasted 6 years. Trump Mortgage and GoTrump.com, two businesses he started in 2006, were dead a year later. Trump Steaks didn't age well either, with a two-month run in 2007. Truth Social's SEC documents give us a history for Trump's six casino and hotel bankruptcy protection filings from 1991 to 2009 in Atlantic City and New York. There's also a breakdown in there of his many lawsuits, which references a 2016 USA Today compilation of those legal actions. Trump sues people and gets sued so often that Truth Social told the SEC its warning does not purport to be an exhaustive list, end quote, of those cases. And Trump's more recent legal entanglements get a rundown as well. There's the New York case going to trial April 15 on charges of paying a porn star hush money to keep talk of an affair quiet during the 2016 election. the Georgia case, where he's accused of trying to overturn the 2020 election, the Florida federal case charging him with keeping and hiding confidential documents at Mar-a-Lago, and the federal case for his actions before and during the Capitol insurrection on January 6th of 2021. The death, incarceration, or incapacity of President Trump could be bad for business, Truth Social said in the SEC filing, because he is the subject of numerous legal proceedings, the scope and scale of which are unprecedented for a former president of the United States and current candidate for that office. Trump also is on the hook for $88.3 million in two verdicts for defaming the writer E. J. Carroll after she accused him of sexual assault, and $454 million for operating a New York business rife with fraud. Trump does enjoy one venue where nothing he says or does can be used against him, Truth Social. The company told the SEC it can't kill Trump's licensing agreement for personal or political conduct, even if it could hurt Truth Social's reputation or brand, or be considered offensive, dishonest, illegal, immoral, or unethical, or otherwise harmful, end quote. Well, that sounds like a deal tailor-made for a guy like Trump, given his history. But does that make Truth Social a good bet for savvy stock market players? That's for you to decide.
The second opinion today comes from Ingrid Jacques, who is a columnist at USA Today. Her column is titled, DeSantis Shouldn't Strive to Be Social Media Nanny for Florida Kids. A few years ago, I was at the airport with my then 10-year-old niece. Her excitement about traveling was palpable, and she eagerly took in everything around her. Something she observed struck her as strange. "Everyone is hypnotized by their phones," she exclaimed. It was true. People throughout the airport seemed glued to their screens, oblivious to the real world around them. That's our reality now. Phones and apps are our most constant companions, and the age that attachment happens is getting younger and younger. It's not a good trend, especially for children, who are learning about the world and how to form relationships. Kids are now lonelier, unhappier, and more depressed than ever, and screen time is certainly a culprit. In his latest book, social psychologist Jonathan Haidt says smartphones and social media have rewired kids' brains, and not for the better. Haidt writes, "There is a huge opportunity cost to children and adolescents when they start spending 6 or 8 or perhaps even 16 hours each day interacting with their devices." The problem is clear. The solution, less so. Florida last week inserted itself into this discussion with a law that limits children's ability to use social media. More on that soon, but a quick segue first. Governor Ron DeSantis has been busy. When he left the Republican presidential primary earlier this year, DeSantis did not go home to Florida and pout. He's been getting things done. He recently signed a bill that prevents squatters from taking over a landlord's property, and a bill that prohibits homeless encampments on public spaces. Two issues that have plagued blue states like New York and California. And last week, DeSantis and state officials settled their ongoing legal battles with Disney. A huge win for DeSantis. Pretty much everyone on the left and in the media had called him a fool and predicted he'd lose to Mickey Mouse's, quote, brass knuckles. There's a lot the governor gets right when it comes to making Florida an enviable place to live. DeSantis often touts Florida as the, quote, free state, and how parents should be the ones to make decisions about their children's upbringing. That's why I was surprised that he signed this law that prohibits children under the age of 14 from joining social media accounts. Those who are 14 and 15 will need a parent's consent. The law also includes additional requirements to keep minors from accessing pornography sites. DeSantis said in a statement, "Social media harms children in a variety of ways. HB3 gives parents a greater ability to protect their children, end quote. Sure, social media is awful in a lot of ways, for adults too. But should the government, and thanks to this law, social media companies, be the hall monitor? That's a job that seems to fall squarely on the shoulders of parents. The fact that California is one of the handful of states that have tried similar social media interference should have given DeSantis pause. After all, California Governor Gavin Newsom is DeSantis' arch nemesis. In California, Arkansas, and other states, these measures have quickly gotten struck down in the courts on First Amendment grounds. They simply go too far to limit the expression of young people. And then there are the privacy concerns that could affect all social media users. To avoid hefty fines for violating the law, companies would need to implement more invasive techniques to access their sites. To his credit, DeSantis did earlier veto another version of this legislation, one that was even broader in scope. That bill faced increased likelihood of a legal challenge. The truth is, the new social media law will still end up in court, and Florida isn't likely to win. I'm all for governors like DeSantis, who say they stand for freedom and parents' rights. But they need to be consistent. Again, that opinion was from Ingrid Jacques.
And it is time for sports. And I don't have a story here to read about it, but I'm just going to say, in case you did not know, that in the girls' basketball NCAA tournament, Iowa won over Louisiana State by a pretty good size margin. It was a very good game. And that would be the only report I have on that right now. But I am going to tell you and read the story in the Des Moines Register sports section about Drake names McCollum as the men's head coach. It's written by Alyssa Hertel of the Des Moines Register. Drake men's basketball named its new head coach on Monday. Ben McCollum, an Iowa native who spent more than a decade as head coach at NCAA Division II powerhouse Northwest Missouri State, will take over the Bulldogs as Darian DeVries' successor. "I am honored to be a part of the Drake basketball family," McCollum said in a news release from Drake following the announcement. "We have seen the transition Drake basketball has made over the past few seasons to become one of the most successful mid-majors in that span. My family and I are very excited to continue that tradition with the support of the great Des Moines community. I would also like to thank President Marty Martin and Athletics Director Brian Harden for allowing me the opportunity to continue the success at Drake. Born in Iowa City and raised in Storm Lake, McCollum played college basketball for the Bearcats and then returned to his alma mater after a four-year assistant coaching stint at Emporia State. In 15 seasons as the Bearcats head coach, McCollum compiled a career record of 394 wins and 91 losses with a 241-63 record in conference play. McCollum put together a 32-7 record in the NCAA Division II tournament, including four national championships, 2017, 2019, 2021, and 2022. The Bearcats might have won four straight national titles had the tournament not been canceled in 2020 due to COVID-19. Under McCollum, Northwest won 25 or more games in 12 straight seasons, the longest active streak among all NCAA men's programs. The Bearcats posted records of 30-plus wins in five seasons, including a perfect 38-0 season in 2018 and 19. Ben McCollum is one of the best teachers and coaches in America at any level, Michigan coach Dusty May said in Drake's press release. He is direct, honest, and incredibly passionate about helping players improve. Drake hit a home run. McCollum is a five-time NABC Division II National Coach of the Year, the 2019 John McClendon National Coach of the Year, all divisions, and two-time Clarence Big House Gaines National Coach of the Year. McCollum led Northwest Missouri State to 12 Mid-America Intercollegiate Athletics Association regular season titles, 8 MIAA tournament titles, and was named the conference's Coach of the Year 9 times. His success garnered accolades from across the nation. When somebody's doing something unique in coaching, I tend to pay attention, Fran Fascilla, a college basketball analyst for ESPN, told the Register in 2022. To watch what Northwest Missouri State has done in the last 10 or so years is remarkable, so I've definitely paid attention to Coach McCollum. So what will McCollum bring to Drake? Fundamentals. There's nothing fancy, Fascilla said in that 2022 interview. No fancy trick plays, no fancy X's and O's. What they do is very subtle. They're a very intelligent team, and it's really about smart players playing fundamentally sound basketball, he said. McCollum takes over a Drake program that has enjoyed substantial success in recent years. DeVries compiled a 150-55 record in 6 seasons, including the Bulldogs, with 3 NCAA tournament appearances in the last 4 years.
I'll see if I can get through this next article quickly. UNI's Parker Kekkonen finishes second in Dan Hodge trophy voting. Northern Iowa's Parker Kekkonen finished second in voting, an honor given to the nation's best collegiate wrestler. Penn State's Aaron Brooks was this year's honoree after winning his 4th NCAA title by defeating North Carolina State's Trent Hidley in the 197-pound final. Brooks garnered 48 of the 59 first-place votes, compared to Kekkonen's 8. The criteria for the award are record, dominance, quality of competition, and sportsmanship. This is the first season prior accomplishments are not considered part of the equation, meaning that Brooks's 3 previous NCAA titles were not a factor. The selection committee for the award is made up of former Dan Hodge Trophy winners, national wrestling media, retired coaches from each region, and a representative of each national wrestling organization. Former Dan Hodge Trophy winners get a vote for each time they won the award. There is also a fan vote for the award, with the leading vote getter earning 5 first-place votes. Brooks received 49.8% of the fan vote, compared to Kekkonen's 36%. Kekkonen finished the season with an NCAA title at 184 pounds. He was 31-0 with a 90.3% bonus rate, winning twice by pin, 12 times by technical fall, and 14 times by major decision. He won in bonus point fashion in all 5 of his NCAA championship matches. He is the first finalist for the award in UNI history. That's one of the best guys in the country, UNI coach Doug Schwab said about his wrestler. Nothing against anyone else, but that was the most dominant guy to me in the tournament, end quote. Brooks was just as dominant as Kekkonen, though. The 4-time NCAA champion was 22-0 with a 90.9% bonus rate with 6 pins, 11 technical falls, and 3 wins by major decision. Kekkonen was one of 5 finalists for the award and the only non-Penn State wrestler in the group. I will go ahead. There is a little bit more about the other members of that group that were voted on. But I'm just going to finish up to tell you that there is no NCAA tournament basketball on tonight, but there is an NBA game at 6:30 on TNT. You can find Oklahoma City at Philadelphia. And as Doug mentioned, those Iowa women did win yesterday. So the final 4 for the women, I don't know for the men, but I know for the women will be South Carolina and NC State, and then UConn and Iowa. So those are games to look forward to, but not tonight. I'll turn it over to Doug here for Dear Abby.
And Dear Abby, after 28 years, my wife left me to find herself. She says she doesn't want a divorce. She just needs time and space to work on herself. But she also wants to work on our marriage. She doesn't want to talk, text, or contact me. My question is, how are we supposed to work on our marriage with no contact? What am I supposed to do? I love her, but she's avoiding me and everyone else, including her friends and family. All she wants to do is work and be alone in her apartment. Signed, Lonely in the East. Well, dear Lonely, Abby says, when you asked how your wife plans to work on your marriage if you aren't seeing each other or communicating or utilizing marriage counseling, you asked a pertinent question. She cannot have it both ways, nor does she seem open to repairing what drove her to leave your marriage. Ask if she is interested in counseling. If she isn't, please get a referral to a therapist for emotional support for yourself right now. If you do, you will more quickly be able to figure out what your next step should be. Dear Abby, two of my children contracted pink eye. We were assured by the doctor that after being on antibiotics for 24 hours, they would no longer be contagious. Feeling assured, we isolated them for 24 hours and went about our plans to visit family as originally scheduled. I later learned that a few days after we left, three of my nephews, whom my sons played with often, all came down with pink eye. I have apologized, but I still feel guilty. We did everything the doctors recommended, yet we still gave it to others. Is there anything else I can do to make up for it? Pink with guilt is how it's signed. Well, dear Pink, a large box of chocolates might sweeten the bitter aftertaste of your visit to that family. Or go online and search for Ice Cream of the Month Club. If you do, you will find several companies that guarantee frozen deliveries nationwide. Include a message on the card, apologies for the pink eye. And be sure one of the flavors is strawberry to reinforce your sentiments. Dear Abby, I am a 14-year-old boy living with my parents. Due to religious constraints, I was not going to be allowed to date until I turned 16. That policy has recently changed, although my parents are still holding me to it. My problem is, there's this girl. She's my sister's best friend. I met her when she came to hang out with my sister. I'm afraid if I wait, she'll fall out of my life. Also, I am afraid that it will be awkward with my sister. What should I do? Lovesick in Utah. Dear Lovesick, your parents are enforcing those rules and, at least for now, you need to abide by them. If this girl is friendly with your sister, she's not going to drop out of your life. That's why, if you are as smart as I think you are, you will make an effort to simply be friends with her. As you get to know each other better, you may form a more lasting relationship than if you were to make a move on her own. I wish you luck.
Well, here's a little weather recap before we close up. The high is expected to be 51 today, the low tonight 35. The forecast in the newspaper says rain and drizzle in the morning, breezy today, winds north from 15 to 25 miles per hour, mainly clear tonight with a shower. And that rain was snow when we were driving in this today, so just FYI there. But that brings us to the end of the Des Moines Register for today. I'm Dale Finnegan, and my partner at the microphone has been Doug Kretzinger. Earlier, you heard Deanna Snyder and Pat Steele. You can listen to IRIS programs on any computer or smart device at any time at the website iowaradioreading.org. Support for today's readings come from the Des Moines Register, Iowa Public Radio, Iowa PBS, and bensoundmusic.com. Thank you for listening to IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.